I'm Smith Called Keith, and you're listening to Fuel, where sales and marketing never sounded so good. Visit thefuelpodcast.com for all our shows.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Jet fuel.
So you can look at an advert on a billboard or on TV, and there's not much of a connection there. But when you're actually telling these brand stories, there is. It's the same with, you know, business development. In how I see it, you know, you can have this, like, if you have a new business meeting over Zoom, it's just never the same as if you're face-to-face. It's like dating. You need to build that emotional connection. Otherwise, you'll just get ghosted.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fuel Podcast, the new business show. I'm your host, a Smith called Keith. Fuel is a proud member of the Marketing Podcast Network, where if you like this show, you'll find a wide range of marketing-related shows to amuse the ear. Coming up, we keep saying this, but this time I actually think it's going to happen. Why public relations is set to become the weapon of choice for brands and companies as they address the challenge of declining advertising effectiveness and the rising popularity of below-the-line activities such as content marketing, product placement, influencers, and a fractured media landscape. There's also some fighting talk from our guests, so get ready to rumble, all you CMOs. Anushka Leon is coming on the show. She's one of the UK PR industry's most high-profile business development personalities. So not only does she lead the charge for one of the world's oldest and most established PR agencies, she's also just been appointed to the chair of the PRCA's business development group. And before you go looking that up in the US, PRCA stands for the Public Relations Communications Association. It's a global PR membership association, and it works tirelessly to further the cause of the PR industry. And if you dig back far enough, I did an interview with the chairman of the whole organization, Francis Ingham, where we discovered how the PRCA practically invented digital PR. Sponsors of this podcast, agency new business platform The Advertist, has just agreed a special discount for PRCA members to help them in their new business pipeline building. Because in times like these, agencies need all the help they can get when it comes to finding their next new client, and The Advertist is a proven way to do this. Daily vertical trade news all in one place, a huge database of brand, marketing, HR and senior contacts, daily people moves, UK and European tenders, mergers and acquisitions, and news about freshly funded edtech, medtech, fintech and every other kind of tech. Spin-outs, spin-ups, MBOs, MBIs, it's all there in one place. The Advertist does all the new business heavy lifting, so you don't have to. Give the team a call on 0203 356 3717 if you're in the UK, or just email hello at theadvertist.com for personal tailored and friendly service. Or you can check out the PRCA's website for details of the special offer at prca.org.uk, prca.org.uk. So anyway, our chat with the wonderful Anushka Leon is coming right up in a couple of minutes, but don't touch that dial, because after a month-long break, Jeremy Davis is back, and boy is he back. Our resident business development commentator and humorist Jeremy is on fire this week, because when is a vegetable not a vegetable? When it's a proposition.
Jeremy Davis! New business trailblazer!
So let's talk about the four P's, the foundational principles of marketing as laid down by Philip Kotler way back when. I say four, but these days, of course, no one can agree just how many P's there are, with estimates for the traditional marketing mix ranging from 5 to 7. In the world of agency marketing, there are 2 more P's that really matter. Positioning and proposition. With apologies to Keith's recent guest, Robin Bonn, whose opinion is that positioning is dead. My opinion is that it's evolved, so that it's no longer the be-all and end-all, but still has a significant part to play in your agency's business development. A bit like the way the monarchy has evolved from a position of absolute power to an important symbolic role. So a case of positioning is dead. Long live positioning. Many people cleverer and better qualified than myself have discussed and defined the relative characteristics of positioning versus proposition. But from the perspective of the new business person at the sharp end of cold channel prospecting, let me oversimplify it. The way I see it, positioning is for inbound leads, proposition for outbound approaches. Let me put it another way. Think about peas. Not the marketing mix variety, but the tasty and nutritious kind that are many children's way into eating vegetables. Except that they aren't really vegetables, but they're part of the legume family, which also includes peanuts. They are very much positioned as vegetables, however, by busy parents trying to fool their children into thinking that they have discovered a vegetable they actually like and might consider at some point further down the line trying some different ones. And also to assuage any parental guilt about dishing up fish fingers and oven chips again by providing the handy get-out, you can have a pudding if you finish your peas. A path of far less resistance than, say, you can have a pudding if you finish your broccoli. And be sure to eat the stalk. But as an outbound proposition, you wouldn't sell peas as veg alongside more exciting foodstuffs like aubergines, cauliflower, or carrots, the kind that can form a meal in themselves. Let's call them full-service veg for the sake of the analogy. So you have to focus on their other benefits, like the fact they go nicely with bangers and mash. Bland, uncontroversial, you could say that just as no one ever got fired for hiring IBM, no parent ever had to face down a tea-time tantrum for serving their children peas. A clear case of proposition and positioning working in perfect harmony. Similarly, look at tomatoes. Tomatoes, to our American listeners, position very much in the vegetable aisle. Prestigious organ of the British press, The Sun, reported in December that tomatoes have in fact overtaken potatoes as the UK's top-selling vegetable, partly down to the decline in home cooking now that we're no longer living in lockdown. This is a triumph of positioning because, as everyone knows, tomatoes are fruit. So both the UK's go-to staple veg turn out not to be veg at all. But you might as well call them veg because it makes us all feel much better about our diet. There's something strangely appropriate to the agency analogy in a world where many agencies will happily position themselves as whatever the client wants. So that's 8 P's that matter in agency business development, if you're keeping count. To come back to royalty, it's just as well that the princess from that fairy tale didn't run a marketing agency, because if 1 P was enough to keep her awake all night, she'd have had no chance of getting any shut-eye.
Today, we head back to my home ground. Public relations was where I began my career in agency life all the way back last century before Rick Astley became the internet's biggest prank. In fact, before the internet. The main role of public relations in the 1980s and 90s was to manage the message of brands, to be able to control the communication to any brand or company's audience. For the next 30 years and up until the birth of social media, this was, crudely, the main function of PR, to eat at the marketing mix table with advertising and marketing and not to ruffle any feathers, to be seen and not to be heard, or in fact to be heard and not to be seen. But with the rise of social media and the growth of user-generated content, the job of public relations has become a lot less fuzzy and a lot more sciencey. PR owns the social media space. It owns the influencer market. Blogs, vlogs, product placement, SEO, and content management. It might have taken a circuitous route to get there, but public relations has become a very powerful marketing discipline, and the people within it are commercially savvy, culturally tuned in marketing professionals. And PR touches us all every day in so many ways, and as a method of generating awareness and sales, it's about as on the money as you like. If advertising is the big guns in the promotional war, then PR is the SAS, the Navy SEALs, the Rangers and the Commandos. Certainly not the ninjas, and if you do spot any ninjas, just be careful. My guest this week has worked on both sides of the aisle, outsourced and in-house, and for the past nearly 7 years, she's been overseeing the very pointy end, the business development end, of one of the UK's greatest PR agencies, which is Richmond and Towers, whose history predates even me and reaches back in time to the 1930s. But even then, the objective of PR, as defined at the time by journalist Basil Clark, was that it must look true and it must look complete and candid or its credit is gone. But just because the PR company is one of the most established in the world doesn't mean that it's set in its ways. In 2019, Richmond and Towers announced that it had been sold to a trust and was now 100% employee-owned, a highly progressive business model. Anouska Leon is very highly regarded in the industry, garnering credits like matchmaker extraordinaire, charming, hard-working and effective business development person with the knack of opening doors, fun, professional and passionate, and a brace of glowing credits from the leadership of The Future Factory, one of the UK's leading business development agencies. And I could go on because she's got loads of recommendations. And that's what we need, quality guests and quality advice, because Anouska is in high demand, so it makes perfect sense that her skills and expertise have also been utilised by the Public Relations Communications Association, or PRCA, whose chairman, Francis Ingham, was on the show last year. So I invited Anouska to come onto the show and to celebrate her recent appointment as co-chair of the PRCA's Business Development Group and to talk about all things PR and new business. So let's get to it, and welcome to the show, Anouska Leon.
Thanks very much, Keith.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, and it's great to see you. And thanks for showing up for this show. I've been looking forward to it, as I said. But now, before we start, I recently read a piece from you, and we've discussed it, about how you got into the PR industry and your early ambitions as a lorry driver. It's probably not a bad skill to have these days with the supply chain issues and stuff. But, I mean, what attracted you to the PR industry?
I thought you were going to ask me what attracts me to the lorry driver industry then. do you know what? People ask me that all the time, and I don't think I could actually say that I was ever attracted to the PR industry. I sort of just more sort of fell into it, which I think a lot of people do. So I think it's I've never actually been a pure PR professional.
Right.
I've always been business development, but I've specialised in PR. And all the things that comes with it, probably for, gosh, at least 10 years.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So I very much started my career out in corporate sales and got wooed by, oh, this is fun. You can earn loads of money in sales.
And obviously, the PR industry was crying out for good business development people. And, So I guess that was kind of, sort of fell nicely for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started off corporate sales. I was doing basically selling events, corporate events, places. Okay. It was one of those kind of sweatshops, make 100 calls a day, phone bashing. And I got vigorous sales training.
Right.
And then after a few years there, it was a very sort of testosterone pumped industry.
Right.
I was a bit like, okay, come on. Do I need to be here anymore? It got very repetitive, and I thought, you know what, let's see what else is out there. And that's how I came across new business.
Yeah.
And I was like, gosh, what's this new business? And I realized it's a sales role, essentially, but in the creative industry. And I thought that sounded quite nice. And that's how I met the Future Factory.
What a crap. Big shout out for them as well. But, I think it was important. I mean, as you said, I mean, that you sort of cut your teeth in the sort of hard boiled boiler room type, approach, because I think at least it gives you a standard of, well, I'm not going to go back to that.
Absolutely not. And I think a lot of people within new business and business development within agencies either started as a PR professional or whatever before that. So they don't necessarily have exactly the same sort of skills. So it's just it's a softer sell. It's a relationship builder and it's nurturing.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's important to have the right balance.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, I wanted to, you know, I was very interested in sort of having you come on the show because, you know, Richmond and Towers as a company is, it's such a forward-thinking PR agency, you know, and through all its kind of changes and iterations and growth and stuff like that. I mean, do you in-house, do you call it R&T? Is that how it's...
We do, yeah. We do. And this is fairly new because we were Richmond Towers.
That's correct.
And we changed the all-important Richmond and Towers because people assumed we were in a tower block in Richmond, which we haven't been. It's actually, it was actually the names of our female founders
exactly.
in 1930.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, through all of its different name changes, I mean, you know, it has always been one of the kind of, as I said right at the start, you know, it's been one of the kind of go-to sort of PR agencies in the sort of food and drink sector and lifestyle, obviously. But I mean, you know, obviously you're a great person to be talking about this. I mean, in terms of the sort of food and drink sector, I mean, do you think that has changed irreversibly now as a result of the pandemic and all the lockdowns? I mean, you know, what's your outlook for the food and drink sector?
I think it has. There's certainly in various elements. You've got sort of people having fallen back in love with sort of trusted brands. We work with people like McVitie's and Pucker Pies. And people just kind of fall in love. I know you. Can you imagine?
Just that name.
The torment every time I come into the office.
The smell of baked goods.
Oh my God. And the biscuits. Stop. But yeah, so I think that they've had a great, well, I would say great time. They have been successful. And I think also whilst people have been stuck at home and incredibly bored, not being able to go out, etc. There's, you know, people have been buying a lot of more luxury premium products. And I feel like, I don't know about you, but as a consumer, once you get used to slightly nicer stuff, it's quite hard to go back, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it comes back to what we were saying about the boiler room. You know, once you've done that, you know, you never want to go back to you never want to go back to how it used to be. You want to keep moving forward. So yeah, absolutely. You know,
I think champagne had its best year or something last year.
Yes, it did. Yeah, and it's quite incredible for everything premium. And I mean, you know, Pucker Pies, I suppose, has become a premium brand anyway, hasn't it? Now, I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of one of the top. Sort of decent pie brands that I seem to recall.
Everyone loves the Pucker Pie.
God, amazing. And because didn't that start off as in the football grounds and stuff, wasn't it? Pucker Pies?
Yeah, and it's still very much in the football grounds.
Oh, right, okay.
It's a football favourite.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's where I knew it. That's where I first came into contact with the brand. So do you think that it's now helped the industry sort of refocus a little bit, or it's given it a new focus? I mean, since the pandemic, I mean, because everybody said, oh, well, it's going to cause absolute chaos in the food and drinks sector. I mean, you know, it hasn't actually caused that much chaos apart from the sort of restaurant side of things, has it?
Yeah. So all the on-trade obviously have had a terrible time,
right.
I suppose it's both food and drink. But the grocery side of things, you know, they have had a good time. I think consumers have been open to trying new things as well as falling back in love with their trusted regular brands. There's things like the online delivery services.
Yes.
Deliveroo, Getir, Gorillas, like all of these things. I think that was always going to happen further down the line. But it's just sped up the process, and that's got to be here to stay, really, hasn't it? And all the meal kits and, you know, people love it.
Well, yes, and today I was actually reading about another phenomenon which is on the rise again. I mean, you back in the 1920s and 30s, in the cafeteria sector, there was a thing called the automat, which was basically a wall of different food options that you could walk into in a cafeteria, and you could just pull them out of a box. And there were people standing behind that wall putting stuff into the box, and you were the other side of the wall as a consumer, just pulling them out. And say, no, I'll take that, you know, whatever. But that format, that system has now come back in. And I read a report this week that they are actually building them into, there is a system now that you can buy for your house that builds into the door, that food delivery companies can actually drop it off on one side. There's no contact needed. They drop it off on one side with a special key that they unlock it with, digital. They put it in there, shut the door, and then you're on the other side of the door. You unlock it with your key, and out comes your food.
Oh my gosh, I did not hear about this. That's amazing.
Fantastic. I thought, what a great, and that's something from, we're talking about, you know, the long and rich history of Richmond and Towers. I mean, that goes back to, you know, the time when, you know, the company was first invented or first created. So that'll be good. Because of the long and rich history of the agency, I mean, you know, you've got a good perspective, not saying you personally, but the agency's got a great perspective on the way that the industry has changed. I mean, what's sort of, do you think has been the most kind of significant change to the business over the last 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's got to be the move from print to digital.
Right.
Really. I mean, I know that was already around within the decade, but I just think how it's just sort of blown up,
yeah.
You know. There's PR is sort of so, it's not as linear as it used to be in the sense that it costs so many channels, as you said yourself, you know, it's almost kind of like, well, I see it as PR is taking on the ad industry because as an agency, we develop creative platforms and we call ourselves a brand engagement agency rather than PR because it's all about the impact that we have rather than what we're doing.
Right.
And the impact is we're engaging with consumers.
Oh, it's interesting that you say that you know it's kind of taking on the ad agency business, and we'll come on to that later on because it's a subject I want to, you know, I do want to sort of drill down a little bit deeper with you on. But I mean, I think that, you know, one of the things that occurred to me when I was sort of thinking about the you know this conversation was that you've been so embedded in the sort of food and drink sector, and sort of one of the biggest things that sort of happened as far as I can see, and certainly me, because I am now, I'm going on the record to say I'm now vegetarian, but I mean, you know, that has, the vegan and vegetarian movement has been absolutely massive. And I mean, you know, that must have created some interesting opportunities for an agency like Richmond and Towers or R&T, hasn't it?
Oh, massively. Yeah, massively. We've been working with Alpro, the dairy alternative, for 20 years. I think it's just more now. I think it's 21 or 22 years.
Wow.
We don't obviously count the last 2 years. Obviously, you have to take a pinch of salt because we've all been locked away. But yeah, I think it's 22 years. And but the agency started with them when they were a kind of niche health food product in health food retail.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
We were tasked with making it mainstream. And so it was very much like, you know, the brand job, but also a category job to make the whole category mainstream. So we've been on a really incredible journey with them. And, you know, there's been massive, massive growth within the sector, obviously. And
sure.
In fact, our CEO, Nikki, she's responsible for coining the phrase plant-based eating.
Is
and
she really?
Look at it today.
Fantastic.
Look at it
yeah,
today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's become part of the normal language now, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think so when brands get wind of that, just our sort of length of experience and insight in the industry, they all obviously want a piece of it.
Sure,
so we've had an amazing opportunity. We call it the plant-based gold rush.
Right.
There's so many brands launching. And obviously from my perspective, that's great from a, you know, business development perspective, because we have some really valuable insight to share with them.
Yes.
We've done everything. I would confidently say there's no other agency in the UK that knows as much about plant-based as we do.
Wow.
So yeah, massive opportunity for us.
That's fantastic. And that's good to hear as well. I mean, because I think, you know, it's quite a big decision that, you know, that I think everybody knows that they at least need to sort of, you know, get on board with the movement as well. And it's got so much future ahead of it. I think it's great.
Totally.
And, you know,
totally.
It's fantastic that you guys are sort of doing that. Now, just to sort of a bit of a sidebar, but as far as the PRCA was concerned, your sort of role within that. I mean, we as I said at the start, we interviewed Francis Ingham a few months back and had a very great chat with him, and we discussed all the kind of different ways that the PRCA is helping its members, and I didn't realise at the time, but even non-members, you know, helping people that aren't PRCA members as well, or agencies. But I mean, your sort of arrival in the sort of business development hot seat has been sort of pretty well received and sort of in the industry, I mean, both by PR and business developers. I mean, what would be your kind of, if you were to give an address to everybody, or I don't know if you may have already done that, but what would your message be to PR agencies as far as business development initiatives are concerned? I mean, how much should they prioritise it?
Oh, God. Well, priorities, I think it should be number one priority, but I would say that, wouldn't I? there's nothing more important. And it goes back to that old saying about how, you know, the new business is the lifeblood of any agency. And I couldn't agree with it more.
Right.
You need to have a constant, fresh sort of pipeline of brands that you're speaking to, because there's always going to be a natural churn with your current clients. And yes, you might grow some of them, but you're going to lose some of them too. And you need to have started building those conversations way before that, you know, you go anywhere near that.
And as we've seen over the pandemic as well, I mean, you know, something can happen and either marketing budgets get stopped or cancelled or diverted or something else like that. And you've got to have some other sort of options standing by.
Exactly. And there's no sort of like one size fits all. I think as far as initiatives are concerned, you know, that you've got to do a bit of everything. You can't just do, you know, one thing in silo. It's
can't just keep bashing the phone.
Not just be phone bashing. But, you know, there's got to be a good mix of content marketing, of, you know, events. You know, you've got to be doing lots of things to actually get a good result, because, yeah, the world has changed.
Exactly. No, I mean, I think there's you know, it's a good idea just to keep it going as a sort of an ongoing process anyway. But I mean, if anybody comes up to you and they're kind of thinking out of starting in the PR industry or starting an agency in general, and they're looking to sort of launch, I mean, what would your kind of golden rule for new business advice be?
Well, I wrote a blog recently, as you referenced right at the beginning, which actually, as we're saying that, thank you very much. That was quite an introduction.
Well, you're welcome. Absolutely.
Made me
welcome.
Blush. so, yeah, in that blog, you can see it on our website, rtc.london. I just talk about how I approach new business. And I think essentially the main takeaway of that is that you really need to be genuine and sort of cut out the BS, be consultative, and actually sort of just be a nice person.
That helps.
Do you know what I mean? So salespeople are obviously, you know, renowned for being pushy and obnoxious, and you know, people don't trust them. It's just a general irritant when you get a call from a salesperson or an email or whatever. If you're just a sort of honest, you've got an honest, unfiltered, no BS approach, that works.
That gets you through.
And just
gets you a long
human.
Way. Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're a long way. Fantastic. And I mean, as far as the PRCA is concerned, I mean, we can make this announcement now. But if there are any PRCA members looking for help in the new business direction, obviously, if you're looking to sort of prospect to create prospects and stuff like that, you can always we've got a deal going with the PRCA at the Advertist, which is the sponsor of this show. And we've got a discount for members of the PRCA, and all that will be in the show notes at www.thefuelpodcast.com. But it's a very cost effective way of getting your business sort of in line. But anyway, so enough of that. And one of the PR industry's new sort of shiny toys is the influencer market, and there's been a massive kind of growth in the use of influencers, especially in the food and drink industry and sort of wider PR channels. I mean, does Richmond and Tower, I mean, firstly, do you endorse the use of, I mean, do you use influencers?
Yes, we do. We do use influencers a lot. So it's a mix of incentivized and paid for partnerships.
Right. What do you think are the benefits of using them? I mean, you know, what, and, you know, I mean, do you see that channel growing?
Definitely. I mean, this is my personal opinion and I don't pretend to be an expert, but I mean, you know, there's essentially influencers represent the very essence of PR. So, you know, when you secure endorsement from an influencer, you're giving, or they're giving the recommendation to their followers, and these followers trust their opinion. So it's exactly like with journalists, you know, who are writing in magazines and online. And also, if you think about how many different channels there are, that's constantly growing. And you're sort of tapping into an enormous amount of followers that they have. But you've always got to be authentic. So as long as the authenticity element has kind of really become very apparent now. So you kind of not only want the big follower numbers, but you also want the authenticity to the brand. Because people are too savvy, they see through that, you know, they want to trust their influencers.
And so, yeah, absolutely. But I mean, so what's your take on like the channels, like, you know, the role that, I mean, in terms of marketing, you know, the channels like TikTok and YouTube and stuff like that, I mean, have they now solidified themselves as a, you know, an actual channel now that you need to be sort of really sort of cognizant of?
Definitely. But I mean, obviously it depends on your brand, and it won't be right for everyone to be on those channels.
Sure.
But what we've seen is just this massive growth within video. Obviously, we don't have the attention spans to sort of read long things anymore. We just want to see a short little snippet of video which we can, that delights our eyes, and then we're on to the next thing. So yeah, there's obviously all the YouTube, all the sort of younger generations are all over YouTube, and that will only grow, I think, as they become adults. You've got Facebook Reels, Instagram Reels. It's only going to grow.
Yeah. But and talking of the sort of, I just wanted to let you know as well, and I'm going to put the link in the show notes for this as well. But there was a fantastic piece in The Guardian this week about influencers. I don't know whether you caught it, but basically it was sort of saying that influencing is now a viable career path for a lot of people, because obviously, you know, it's very low barrier to entry. I mean, basically you just need a camera and, you know, and set up a YouTube sort of account. But obviously you've got very high rewards, so it's low, you know, low investment, high reward. And once you've sort of figured out how to get people's attention, obviously that's when the money starts coming in. But what they point out in the article, which I thought was quite interesting, and I'd love to sort of get what you think about it, but, you know, there's an addiction developing in, you know, trying to build followers, and it can actually lead to kind of, you know, changes in human behavior, because, you know, obviously they're recommending things sometimes that, you know, that they're over recommending sometimes, and it's kind of changing their behavior. So it was quite an interesting piece.
I don't know about you, but I have the amount of crap I've bought off Instagram is just unreal, especially during the pandemic.
I saw a great thing on a TV show the other day where they said the Amazon delivery person sort of showed up, and the lady, she goes, I love it when, you know, she goes, drunk me surprises sober me with presents, you know.
Yeah. God.
One of the sort of consequences of the pandemic, and the sort of, you know, the way that everything fractured between customers and clients and stuff like that, and their agencies, has been, and you touched on this earlier, has been, you know, the necessity for content development, you know, and which will cover, you know, anything from kind of thought leadership, white papers, podcasts, vlogs, live streams, webinars, all those sorts of things. I mean, do you think that the PR industry is in for another change after the pandemic? You know, that it's kind of, I mean, that it's sort of building all these things into its arsenal now?
I think so, personally.
Right.
Whether this is correct or not is another thing. But, as I mentioned, so we're in the process of repositioning from being a PR agency, because that has, you know, some connotations, to a brand engagement agency, just because, as I said, it's about the impact that we're having.
Right.
Rather than what we're doing. Like, we're not going to talk about the activity we're doing. We're talking about the impact that we're having on those businesses. So we create, we have develop creative comms platforms that engage with our clients' audiences on whichever platform we might find them on. I think, you know, essentially we're doing quite often the work that an ad agency would have historically done, especially some of the work that we've been doing with Outpro. We create these big creative ideas, right, or campaigns, and they go across all channels. So, I mean, in my view, we are coming for the ad industry.
Fantastic. There's some fighting talk.
Yeah, and you could argue that, watch out. You could argue also that, you know, PR has historically been, you know, you can't measure PR, therefore.
Right, yeah.
There's an issue there. We can't prove ROI. But, with this sort of the boom of digital PR and just generally how all of these channels are tying up together, and just becoming more and more entrenched, the ability for us to measure is so much, you know, so much easier.
Yeah.
And we can really show the impact that we've had on sales and map that all out. And you could really argue also that PR or comms is the only channel really that would have an emotional impact with mm-hmm. consumers. So you can look at an advert on a billboard or on TV, and there's not much of a connection there. But when you're actually telling these brand stories, there is. It's the same with, you know, business development.
Right.
In how I see it, you know, you can have, it's like if you have a new business meeting over Zoom, it's just never the same as if you're face to face. It's like dating.
Sure.
You need to build that emotional connection. Otherwise, you'll just get ghosted.
Fantastic. Oh, there you go. But and I'm glad you sort of did mention the whole idea of the R&T business model, because the company, I just want to make sure I got my facts straight here. The R&T went employee owned in 2019. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, and was it the first? I mean, has there been any other agencies doing it since then?
They have.
Right.
We are the first, and I believe, as far as I am aware, we're the only. So we were definitely the first 100% employee-owned PR agency.
Wow.
And we are, I believe, still the only. There are other agencies. I think there's a handful of agencies who have gone part employee-owned, but not 100%. So, I mean, in my view, unless you're 100% employee-owned, does it really mean anything?
Fantastic. And so, yeah, because you can't get a little bit pregnant, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, how did you feel when you heard that the company was going to do this?
Wow. I mean, I find all change unsettling.
Okay.
So I was obviously naturally quite suspicious, like, what does this mean? What does this mean? But the more I learned about it, the more I just saw it can only be a positive for me as an individual, as an employee, as an owner, as we call our employees, but also just as a business.
Right.
It can only be a positive, because if you think how invested everyone within the agency is, everyone's working for themselves and for their teams. There's equal profit shares. There's, you know, when you're working on your client's business, you're really working for yourself. We've got basically a bunch of 30 entrepreneurs who all own their own business. It's only a positive. Get better work for the clients. People stay with us longer, which...
I was going to say the retention side of it must be phenomenal.
And that's obviously one of brands' biggest bugbears in agencies, is that the churn rate is so high. But with Richmond and Towers, it's not at all. we keep people forever.
That's beautiful. And it's nice to, I mean, I think that's really kind of nice ringing endorsement of the way to go, because, that you often hear that everybody's a team, or, you know, they hate referring to their people as employees and stuff like that. But this really does, you know, set it in stone that there is a difference in the relationship, and it's not an employer-employee relationship now. This is this is truly a team of people that are all invested in the future of the company, which I think is it's fantastic to see.
And it's genuine as well. It's, you know, we're fully transparent with the whole agency. you know, everyone knows that they're not just lining the pockets of the board directors.
I guess so. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So you get to see all the financial side of it as well.
Exactly. And everyone's voice is heard. You know, it's not just that we say that. It's genuine. Yeah. We have a member of the team join us at every board meeting to voice an opinion from the team to be discussed.
What was the thinking behind it? What sort of started that whole thing to begin with?
It was just an evolution. I think the business as a whole has always been on that sort of model. We grow people.
Right.
And it's just about sort of, it just felt like the next step. We were the first PR agency in the UK. We were the first female set up PR agency. We just like to do things a bit different.
Another record to break, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Well, there we go. Exactly. And it's just, you know, it kind of is a sign of our times as well, which, you know, in process of getting B Corp certified, it's just a nice way to give back to, and as a culture for the agency.
And you'll be B Corp certified as well?
We're in the process of getting our certification. Okay. Rumour has it, we are like passing with flying colours, but we haven't actually got our certificate yet.
Oh, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go.
I know, right. Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, secret. News out. Spoiler alert.
Fantastic. Excellent. And, of course, obviously, you got a rebrand, and I love the way that all the employees, everybody's drop or employees, all the what are you? Your colleagues, are you? Is that
owners.
Your owners. Okay, so all the owners, they get to drop their name into the company name, I think, which is I thought was quite fun. Quite a nice little touch.
The amount of emails I've had saying, oh, would Richmond and Towers and Leon be interested in everything? That's just a nice little, you know, thing. It's not actually the name of the company.
That's fantastic. That's really good. And so, okay, so now another, I mean, talking, you keep handing me these beautiful little segues to walk into, but you mentioned female ownership as well. And I wanted just to cover the subject of women in the workforce. I mean, we had some good news this week where the UK has now climbed to second in the international rankings for women's representation on boards. And this is within FTSE 100 level companies. But nearly 40% of those FTSE 100 board positions are now held by women, which is, you know, compared to 12.5% 10 years ago. So, I mean, obviously things are heading in the right direction. But the next rung down, it's kind of a different story, because obviously during the pandemic, there was a huge growth opportunities for job, job opportunities for women in the workforce, and certainly in the UK. But now there's this kind of return to work. Companies are kind of experiencing a difficulty in sort of retaining quality sort of females in the workforce. I mean, what's your kind of view on how companies should sort of try and pivot their business model to make it more possible for women to enjoy a quality career in companies?
I think keeping this flexible working would be a start.
There you go.
Improving, you know, having decent maternity packages. Because if you think about it, especially within the PR agency world, it is quite female heavy.
Right.
And you know, you are at risk of losing amazing talent unless you have a decent maternity package. Flexi working, decent maternity package, equal pay. I think all of those things would be a good starting place.
Just the usual things that everybody's
exactly.
I know, but it's funny, isn't it, that it took a pandemic for that to happen, and then, you know, there seemed to be a resistance for that to actually stay as a permanent part of the, you know, of a company's sort of a company strategy. It seems that so obvious that, you know, that actually highlighted a real benefit of being able to open up a company to let women, you know, sort of enjoy a more flexible career in a business, you know. But that's great. That's good to hear. And obviously you're a good champion for the cause as well, which is great to hear. And in terms of, you know, if anybody was interested in either sort of speaking to you about any of the sort of subjects that we covered, I mean, what are the best ways to sort of get hold of you these days?
I would say via LinkedIn or Twitter.
Are you a fan of LinkedIn? Are you a networker?
I love LinkedIn. I feel like I was one of the sort of founding partners. I wasn't, but I've been on it for so long.
Yes, I know. I think I've done 12 years now.
I went on it as soon as it was launched, but I don't know what I'd do without it, basically. That's fantastic. LinkedIn, Anoushka Leon. Twitter, I'm at Anoushka Leon.
You've got a very active Twitter channel as well. I noticed the other day. It's you've all sorts of fabulous stuff on there.
I mean, no one ever talks to me on Twitter, but I mean, I like to still broadcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? Yeah, it's the out of work Anoushka, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you can also reach me on email, which is anoushka@rtc.london.
RTC.London. And obviously we will put all of those details in the show notes sort of out on the website at www.thefuelpodcast.com. So, well, congratulations. You've done the hard part now. Now comes the easy bit, and we talk about some kind of out-of-work things. So it's last orders at the bar. And I asked you to new game of show and tell, to bring an object and explain its significance. So let's have it, Anoushka.
Well, I was actually going to say, you just said the out-of-work bit. Right. I was a bit like, what? Business development people don't have out-of-work lives.
We never switch off.
Oh, are you mad? Do you know what? I haven't actually bought it, but I do have a photograph of it.
Go on.
Oh, it's very difficult to show you.
Come on. Look at it. Oh, people, process, place, a history of design. Oh, okay. Explain.
Yes. So People, Process, Place, History of a Design Company by David Leon. So that's my father, who is 79 years old, and he is an architect, interior architect, and he's just written and published this book. And he gave it to me as my Christmas present.
Oh, fantastic.
It's very important to me. It will be available if anyone's interested in architecture or design. It's got lots of lovely pictures. It's also dedicated to me amongst my other siblings, but they're less important. And
no rivalry there.
No, none. It's brilliant. And it will be available on the internet. The internet.
The interweb, through Amazon or something.
The interweb. Yes. I'm not sure about Amazon, but he's going to have a dedicated website. I will share it on my LinkedIn.
Yeah, do that. And we'll put that on the show notes as well, because I think it looks like a great book. So, I mean, obviously don't want to go too heavily into it, but that's where you get your sort of love of design and creative arts and stuff, I take it?
I think so. Unfortunately, I never got the talent, but I did get the love of it. So, yeah, I guess so.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great.
He was specialised in workplace design, and he was one of the sort of real, very innovative of the time. And in fact, it was him who used to speak at conferences talking about his work. And that is how I started in the sales industry. Because I went to go and work for the conference company that he used to speak at, because I couldn't find a job when I graduated.
Well, there we go.
It all comes back round.
That's great. That's fantastic. Well, that's good to hear. And best of luck, Mr. Leon, with the book. And we'll give it a good plug. Fantastic. That's a great show and tell. Now, the important stuff: music. I asked you to recommend a song, and I have to say, it's a dance floor classic.
It really is.
Go on.
Yes, Sir, I Can Boogie.
Baccarat.
I was like, oh God, I can't remember. Yeah, oh my gosh, it's just my favourite song in the whole world, and every time it comes on, it just brings me so much joy.
It's fantastic. What a song. It's that is a dance floor banger. And we'll be playing that as your walk-off music for the show anyway. So,
oh my gosh.
So I guess it'll be your boogie-off music as well.
It's really well going into Friday.
Fantastic. And well, I guess the next question, could have answered itself, because I asked you to recommend a book, and obviously you could have quite easily just recommended your dad's book again and given it a second plug, but you haven't. So what books do you recommend we'll pick up and read?
I struggled with this one because there are two that my current personal favourites, which I bore my colleagues with the whole time because I can't talk about it enough. It's called Morality by Jonathan Sacks.
Right.
And for those who don't know him, he is passed away actually. He's a modern day philosopher and a rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not remotely religious. I'm a complete atheist. However, what I find so interesting about this is it's just about being a good person and a good community. And I think it's kind of very strong in my core values and beliefs. Anyway, as you may have heard throughout this session, when I'm just saying, just be a nice person.
Yes, it just rounds it off perfectly.
It just, really, really does resonate well with me. And I think it's particularly interesting. There's a chapter on the markets, like morality and markets, which is all about business, obviously.
Right.
And I think that I was actually talking to my boss about this the other day. I think that Richmond and Towers does actually have that as a value. And it's something we've totally lost touch with. Everyone's just obsessed with, getting themselves rich, making as much money as possible, and losing fact that actually, yes, it's great to make money yourself and your colleagues and etc., but it's also great to create jobs. And I think businesses are about creating jobs primarily, and if you've got that sort of ethos as well as obviously making a living and making yourself money and everyone money, I think that is a really valuable perspective.
That's a very wise, very wise thing. There's a code in the I'm a comic book fan, and The Walking Dead, when that first came out, there was the code that they live by after the apocalypse was with food and stuff, was take what you need and leave what you don't,
Yes.
And I think that's a good code to life generally, is just to sort of have enough to get used to yourself by, but don't be greedy.
Exactly. And that's actually a point that I have written about, but not mentioned.
Mm.
Just that there's no need to be greedy.
Yes, that's fantastic. And what was the other book?
The other book, oh my God, okay. Now I need to remember the name of it. It's called This Much Is True.
Okay.
By Miriam Margulies.
Oh, right. Yes.
Actress and comedian. Oh
yep.
My God. I always listen. I have Audible and I'm dyslexic. Not massively so, but enough to become a really, really slow reader.
Right.
So I always listen to my books on Audible. That book is just so funny. It's jaw-droppingly shocking, and she's just so wonderful.
Does she narrate it?
She does. I just want everyone in the world to read it because it brought me so much joy. I'd sit there and listen to it for hours, just in bits of giggles. I can't recommend it enough.
Fantastic. It's called This Much Is True.
This Much Is True by Miriam Margulies.
Fantastic. Well, that's a great way to round that off. That's fantastic. Anushka, thank you so much. It's been real good fun to talk to you and to chat on the old the PR and the new business front. And thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope you had some fun.
Oh, I did. Thank you very much for inviting me. Oh,
that's all right. No problem. And obviously, may this be the first of many, many podcast appearances for you. And at least I'll be able to say, well, she was on my show first. So that's great.
Oh, yeah.
And please remember me to Mr. Metcalf as well. And tell him I said hi, because I remember from the days of yore, he was a contact of mine back in the early PR days. So we can catch up with all the links that we've talked about in the show at www.thefuelpodcast.com. In the meantime, obviously you've got a full plate of tasks with your PRCA duties and your Richmond and Towers duties, so obviously I wish you good luck with both of them. And I hope we get the chance to do this again soon. I think it was fantastic. I've really enjoyed talking to you, Anushka. Thank you very much.
Oh, no shame. Well, thank you very much, and anytime. Well,
all the best to you and to your business and personal families.
Thank you. You
all
too.
All right. Bye for now.
Bye.
Sir Weekend Boogie. My hearty thanks to Anoushka. I just love her passion and enthusiasm for what she does. It's so infectious, and it's a great example for anyone coming into the world of new business. Thanks, Anoushka. I hope we get to talk to you again soon, because there's plenty more questions where that came from. In the meantime, my thanks to Team Fuel. That's Donna Smith, Matt Smith, Jeremy Davis, Matt Bullard, and Peter Banks for all the production, and to the Marketing Podcast Network for the support in distributing this show. Please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts, and then you'll know when we've got a new one out. For now, this is me, a Smith called Keith, full of gratitude for your support and looking forward to my next interview on Fuel, the podcast for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you? I'm a Smith called Keith, and you're listening to Fuel, where sales and marketing never sounded so good. Visit thefuelpodcast.com for all our shows.